Welcome to the Gear Garage Live Show. This weekly YouTube show covers whitewater rafting, river safety,
oh God, I lost my paddle,
gear, and anything else Zach feels like rambling on about.
Well, here we are on Tuesday with another captivating Gear Garage Live Show. Thank you all for joining. And today we have a pretty simple agenda, and that's just answer questions. So I'm going to just jump right into questions. And yeah, those of you that have questions, I'll answer them here. If you're watching and you have a question, put it in the comments below and I'll answer it to go. And if you're listening to this as a podcast, I apologize. This is not meant as a podcast. This is meant as a YouTube live show. And I'll do my best to read the questions and help you feel involved. But really, this is meant to be a YouTube live show. Okay, here we go. This one's about cat flip lines. Hey man, I was watching your last episode and heard you say you were struggling to find material for the cat flip line that would stay tight to the boat and yet stretch so you can stand up further when reflipping the boat. What if instead of finding different material, you just tied a 2 foot long line or strap to the middle of the stretchy flip line, making a T shape? This can be a pretty short strap or piece of rope that, while yes, is dangling below the boat, is only 2 feet or so and isn't any more dangerous than the bungee line. And it goes on about this. That's a cool idea. I'd rather just find the right bungee. I think, like, I see what you're saying. Just like, if it doesn't stretch enough when you pull on it, add an extra line. But then you'd have to grab that specific line. And it's the problem, and this is hard to explain. Let me talk about this with flip lines. Then one thing with flip lines, that if it's just a line, let's just say we have a single line attached to something. What can I attach this to? I don't know. Let's just say it's attached to something. It's clipped onto the raft. When you hold just a single line, it's hard. You have to grip it. You have to put grip strength into it to hold onto it. And you can slide off of it like this. So it's hard to, you have to find it and then grip strength off of it. If you have some sort of a loop, and this loop is dangerous. So when you use slip lines, it's adding danger. And I have to say, like, it's a decision. Do you want to quickly reflip or do you want to like avoid a loop? But if you can just lean back, and it's hard to do here on the loop like that came off. But when you're grabbing the loop like this, it doesn't take as much strength and you don't slide off the end. You just grab it and pull back. And so it's the same thing with the line you're talking about. When it's a line you have to grip, you have to hold on with your hands and you could slide off the end. The beauty of the bungee thing is you just grab the bungee and you pull back and it's really quick. So I think I see what you're saying. What you're saying could work, but it's in a very specific place and it's something you could fall off the back of. I'm just going to find the right bungee. I think that's the best solution. Instead of making a mediocre product, I'm going to take time and make the best product I can. So thanks for the suggestion, but I'm going to skip that one. All right, next one. What is the water temperature typically in mid-July and August? This is the Salmon River. I can handle 65 degree water with 75 air temperatures. This kind of info can help me plan. I will stop by in October if anyone's around. I know it's hunting season. Okay. So I don't know the answer to this. I'm sorry. I mean, the Salmon River is a long river. I'm talking about the middle fork of the salmon, the main salmon, the lower salmon. I can't tell you what the water temperature is going to be. I can tell you it's probably not going to be 65. It's probably going to be colder than that. But honestly, I'm not sure. Yeah. So sorry, I can't answer that question. I'm incompetent. All right. Maybe ask Google. All right. Can you tell me the difference? This has to do with oar holders. Can you tell me the difference about the difference in control? Difference in control in technique between pins and clips, or rights and spinnies? The raft and cap boats I bought have pins and clips, so that is what I have been using for the past few years. Thanks, love your show. I apologize for those of you listening to me read this. I read them and I think about them at the same time. It makes my reading ability awful, but I'm doing my best. So, oh man, pins and clips and oar locks. We could go down a whole path. And so, first of all, I'm going to answer your question briefly, but and clips, just Google this. You're going to find, I'm surprised my articles aren't showing up. Here we go. Debating oar locks versus pins and clips. Here's a whole blog post with information. I could just regurgitate this right now, but it just sounds exhausting to me. So here's a whole podcast, or go to YouTube and just search Orlov. And I have several videos already on this. Fins and clips. So Aaron and I have a nice conversation about this on the Illinois here. Here we go. Pins and clips versus Orlov. This is the conversation Aaron and I have on the Illinois. I do another video here. I probably have more. There's another video. I have three videos right there. Cody does one. Cody just switched to pins and clips this year. He has some cool insights. There's another video about setting up Orlocks. Like, I have beat this to death on the internet. So I'm going to give you my quick answer. And that is, if you want precision, awesome boating, you want pins and clips. I think it's more precise. When you have Orlocks, or jiggles around in the Orlock, it's not cleanly attached. It's not precision. It's there, and it's spinning in your hand. If you want to just be able to feather your oars and just feel really in touch with the water, go with Orlocks. Go with spinnies. Orlocks, which is just spinnies with a little thing that holds in place, is kind of a mix between the two. And I think it's a decent mix between the two. It doesn't allow you to feather, but what is the advantage of that over pins and clips? None, really. It's like basically like you run Orlocks and you want to have your oar in place when you're running harder by more. Like, big generalization. Pins and clips are for like class 4 and 5 and big heavy gear boats. Orlocks are for class 1, 2, 3 and easy class 4 and for running lighter boats. And I know some of you are probably running heavy gear boats on class 5 with spinnies. Cool. You're an exception. Most people that are running class 4 and 5 or running big, heavy boats have pins and clips. That's just most of the way. For me, I'm the same way. If I'm running class 3, I like feathering. I like spins. I really enjoy the motion. I like, you know, being able to turn a blade in the water. I really enjoy it. And so I'm going to choose Orlocks for like class 2 and 3. If I have to run my Orlocks in class 4 and 5, I'm going to want to put orights on there just to give me that extra control. If I have to make that big pull, some big move, I'm going to want orights. But in general, when I'm running harder whitewater, you'll see me almost always use pins and clips. It's just superior. The other big advantage of pins and clips, and a reason to use them, is you develop better technique. You're not allowed to make myself big. There are things people do. They pull their oars in like this. That's bad form. They push their oars forward, bad form. You will develop better form and better technique if you start with pins and clips. You'll be forced to properly put your handle back, blade forward, which is like the right technique for shipping your oars. So shipping your oars only refers to handle back, blade forward. There's no name for this. People call this Superman, handles forward. It's not super. And so people that learn on pins and clips develop a lot of bad habits because they can't pull their oars in, they can't throw them forward. Sorry, I say people that learn with oar locks develop bad habits. People with pins and clips are forced to develop good oar management habits. And so I'm going to suggest pins and clips for those of you that want a long-term, get really good and run harder rivers. If you're just always going to run class 3, there's no point in touching pins and clips. You're going to be fine. Okay. Sean has some comments that helps with, sweet. Just caught the last flows in the tee. Great run of Clavy, but oar snapped. Yeah. Oar management, Sean. I can't wait to see the video. Okay. So, back to answering this question, the difference in control, you just have more control with pins and clips because the oar is not rattling around. It's very fixed in place and it forces good oar management, especially for big, hard rivers. But for most people, spinnies are fine or orights are fine. And then the videos I have, I've already done a million videos on this. Watch those if you want more information. Cool. Hi, Zach. Enjoy your show. Have you run the Drongne shoe from the top? Is it really kind of 3+ to 4-? Just want to know what to expect in early December. So the Drongne shoe is a river in Bhutan. And I've only run the bottom part. The top is actually easier. I already have the map of this one ready to go. Let's see, share screen. So here we are in Bhutan. I'm gonna make this corner. And I've already zoomed in a little bit. The Drongme Chu actually starts in India. The first descent was done illegally by Ben Stooksbury. He started up here in India. It starts in India, goes through Bhutan, and ends in India. Totally illegally, totally wrong. Floated through Bhutan under the radar and then left Bhutan over the border down here. Kind of messed up, but whatever. And so this upper part, not driven, I've actually paddled some tributaries of the upper Drongme up here. And by the way, we're in Far East Bhutan. It's several days of driving to get here from the main airport, or you can fly all the way out here too. But it's a hard river. This upper section's hard. You can put in near Trashagong. I always pronounce that wrong. Basically, right down here where this road is. And below here, and I haven't done it, and I've been to the put-in. I've been told it's like class 4 plus 5 a lot of the way. You can run the Drongme Chu all the way down to near Kangkar. And this is where I launched. So I didn't run this upper section. We drove to Kangkar, which is an epic, epic drive to get there. And then drove down a little bit ways and then hiked into a bridge. So our put-in, where's that bridge? Our put-in is somewhere. You can see, if you can just look at the river here, you just see like, yeah, there's some rapids. There's some rapids, nothing crazy. This is the confluence of the Kuri Chu. There's a big rapid right here, right before the confluence. And then below here is generally pretty easy. It becomes the Manas. But we put in... Let's see, where are we here? There's a bridge somewhere here. Looking for it. We put it right below a bridge. Did I miss the bridge? Yeah, I missed the bridge. Keep going up a little bit. Keep going up. And you can look at the quality of the rapids. The bridge might be right here. And we drove in, we had to hike the last mile in. It wasn't the worst. It was a nice hike, but there was these crazy spiders. There were spiders everywhere. Somewhere around here we put in, and there should be a bridge we're seeing on Google Earth, but I don't see it. What you're talking about is above here. And now when you go upstream, you're going to see a lot more rapids. And you can just kind of tell if you look at Google Earth a lot. These are pretty big rapids. And because you'll see it's in the shade a bunch, that just tells you it's a deep canyon. So it's a pretty deep committing canyon, pretty big rapids. And so what I've been told, and you can see there's a lot of it, a lot of white water. What I've been told by the people who've done it is it's definitely class 5. And it's probably only been done 7 or 8 times, I'm guessing. Not that many. That's easy through here. Easy through here. It's more challenging. But there's a lot of rapids. And so for me, I have chosen not to do it. Are you even at the road yet? Oh, there's a road. Hold on. Yep, that's the road. So all this, for me, I've chosen not to go in the upper section. It's easier. You don't have to hike to put in. It's an easier drive. There's a road that goes right here. You can put in right here. It's super easy to put in. But for me, from what I've heard, the challenge of the rapids combined with how remote of a canyon it is, combined with being really far from hospitals, you're on the far east of Bhutan, the risk is too much for me. Like if I was doing these style of rapids, and I was in the U.S., I feel much better about the risk because I'm at home, there's good hospitals, there's good evac. But here, if something goes wrong, it's a long ways to an airport. And so I'm pretty personally not in that section. The first trip, like I said, was Ben Stooksbury poached it. The second trip was a commercial trip. Like they took, BOBO took commercial guests, they ran it. There were some gear boat flips, there were some issues. But the way to run it, I think responsibly, or the way I do with the level of risk I'm interested in, you drive to Kangkar, which is epic drive. You drive down the Kuri Chu, which is like, you know, pretty, you're already pretty far out there. This epic drive up and over to Kangkar, down a little bit, then hiking in. But it's, the drive is epic, honestly. So that's my answer to that question. So here we go. Pat just let me to drag my shoes off. Yeah. The Karnali. Yeah, the Karnali or Timur are probably awesome. Yeah. It's a lot to pull out. That Drongme Chu, man, it's pretty big. The Krenali would be great. That's awesome. Those are awesome rivers. And you know, the both the Krenali and the Tamir, I mean, I haven't done either one of them, but I was just hanging out with a bunch of Nepalis last week, and they were saying how a lot of these rivers are getting dammed, especially the Krenali, and now is the time to do the Krenali before the dams turn into the river that's it just isn't. And so that's awesome. And I would say, again, like for me, the risk is too high, especially commercially. If it was me and like some good buddies and we were kayaking it, I feel better. But when I'm bringing people there, there's just so much, that much risk is too much for me. I will probably never, who knows if I'll run this river again, because that drive to Kankar is legit. It is insane. It's hard to even put into words how crazy that drive was. It's by far the craziest drive I've ever done, by far. Just the exposure on the side of cliffs, the nastiness of the road, the length of the drive, it was insane. There's a way to do this, though, where you helicopter in to Kankar. And so I would do that again. If I did this again, if I had the right group, we could probably helicopter, probably not even to Kankar. You can helicopter in somewhere over here, this town right here, and the hike in from there. I think I would do that before doing the upper. But it'd be expensive. Helicoptering is super expensive. The trip I'm going to do this fall, and we're going to look into as a commercial trip, is the lower Puna Sangchu, which is that's that one. Let's find the lower Puna Sangchu. Where are we at here? Sorry. There we go. This is the Puna Sangchu. So the river I want to do this fall that I've never done, you can put in right here, and it's only a day's drive, a little more than a day's drive from the capital, from Paro. Getting out to the Drawmechu is an epic drive, but like the roads out here are pretty good. And then doing this section in 3 days, then down to the Indian border. And supposedly it's just like class 2-3, not that hard. Look at these goosenecks. But if it's a fun trip and you know it's not threatening, you know, if it's too easy, I probably won't bring people here in the future. But if it's the right level where it's fun, there's great camping, I'll probably do commercial trips on this section in the future. I've avoided it till now because it's my fear is that it's a little too easy, and you know, people want some rapids. It's funny, we want to do rapids that are as hard as we can do safely at a limit. Like that's what our goal is. Well, did y'all hear that airplane? It's loud. But like, oh sorry, we may pull the map up. Back on the map. Thanks, Kristen. So sorry, we were on the Drawmechu over here. The Drawmechu comes through Trashagong. I want to do a trip over here. Gotta find it at the end. There's Timpu. Yeah, this river right here down the Indian border. So the road leaves you here. So this is a trip on this river here, the lower Puna Sangchu, which I think is class 2-3. The thing about boating, we all want to go boating on a river that challenges us, but isn't dangerous. And that's a very fine line. Like, and that's different for everybody. And so for some people, that's like class 2. Some people, that's class 3. Some people, that's class 4. Some people, that's class 5. But most of us, the river we want is like class 3+. So the rapids are challenging, but not threatening. And the number of rivers like that in the world are minimal. Like that's what makes the Middle Fork of the Salmon so popular, the Rogue so popular, like 3+. Nothing's really scary, but they're challenging enough that everybody is excited. But there's other multi-day trips like the lower Klamath or the lower Trinity in California that are too easy. And there's rivers like the South Fork of the Salmon, they're too hard. And so finding that sweet spot of like the perfect level of rapid is really cool. The lower Drawmechu, the section I did, I think was maybe a little too hard as well. There was two rapids really that were like more than class 3, maybe even like a tiny bit more than class 4, maybe like 4+. So the average person might be nervous a few times, is maybe too much. The lower Puna Sangchu, I think, is going to be a cool like class. Hopefully it's class 3 and something people really enjoy. Okay, so that's it for talking about that. Let's go through any comments we have. Yeah, the upper drama is full on. From what I've heard, it's a handful of big rapids. From what I remember, the boys telling me is like maybe like 5 class 5s and a bunch of long class 4s. Let's see. Timber five times a pad. Yeah. Yeah. And I heard the 4-day trek, there's a road coming in. So pretty soon it's going to be a 1-day trek. And I think from what the Nepali guys are telling me is that the trek is a really cool part of the trip. Like, it's really cool. You trek 4 days and go in the water. Here pretty soon it's going to be like a 1-day trek, which kind of takes away from the trip. So yeah, the Timber sounds awesome. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Kristen, thanks for letting me know. Well, that's it, team. I'm going to take a second here and do, before we close up, if you all have any questions, add them in the comments below. Do a little self-promotion of just some things I've got going on. The River Hardware site has been really fun for me, and I have a couple things for sale I'm super excited about. One of them, I'm going to take some photos of today, is this new fleece. We worked with IR to design what I think is the perfect Patley fleece. That's what I'm calling it. It's just like a pretty thick fleece. Just classic, and it's Polar Tech, I think, if I remember right. What did we use? I think I wrote it in here somewhere. Polar Tech Power Stretch. It's like really good fabric. It stretches a lot. They look cool. We threw our logos on there. And so if you're looking for a paddling fleece, I'm super stoked on it. The other thing is I just finally got these pulleys back in stock. And so if you're looking for high quality pulleys, these Rock Exotica, there's the mini machined and just the machine just a little bit bigger. They're expensive, but these are, in my opinion, the best pulleys you can get for whitewater. This is just a classic, awesome pulley. Sealed bearings, really strong, really efficient. And I've been sold out of these for a while. And so if you're looking for good pulleys, I have these ready to go. So I just changed it so that, I mean, one of the things about running the store is I have to charge for shipping. And I don't get like Amazon discounts. And so I think a lot of people aren't buying things because shipping. I just changed it so any orders over $250 are free shipping. So if you want to order a rope and some pulleys and a press six, I just took shipping off for those bigger orders. Maybe someday I'll get a deal on shipping that can drop the shipping prices. But unfortunately, as a small business, I have to charge for shipping. Cool. Yeah, that's sweet. I'm stoked, Sean. I just added the free shipping, so that'll help. And this really is the best stuff. And this is stuff I use. I like a lot. Whether it's the ropes, let's see, you know, these high quality ropes, really nice carabiners, a variety of just really nice carabiners. And we actually have pre-cut webbing slings for those of you that need webbing slings. And this really fancy, I have like two of these left, I think, this really fancy pulley right here. And of course, my favorite prusik, the Sterling Auto Block. So anyway, enough self-promotion. Thank you all for watching. Thanks for submitting the questions. I'm around next Tuesday, so we'll do a show next Tuesday at 2. And thank you all for watching. See you next time.